Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Daniel Foster, news editor at National Review Online, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Dan bummed that he's not going to be in the Panthers skybox tonight at Bank of America Stadium. He's going to have to tough it out there at the, Time Warner Cable Arena. Either way, it's a major corporate sponsor, which I'm sure all the Democrats there are still very upset about. Nonetheless, we have good martinis, bad martinis, and crazy martinis for you today. The good martini is not actually good. The good news related to this martini is that it just shows how the Democrats were totally caught flat-footed by something that was totally avoidable, and that's references to God and Jerusalem being the capital of Israel being stricken from the platform as it was contained in there in 2008. This year, neither were there, and this got such a reaction from Republicans, the media, and elsewhere that the Democrats decided, you know what, we need to put it back in just to get rid of this issue. So Antonio Villaraigosa, the mayor of Los Angeles, goes to the floor, says this will require a two-thirds vote to put it back into the platform. He did not expect not to be able to tell which side had won after the first call, so he asked for another vote, and he still couldn't tell. And so then finally the rules lady came out and said, you just have to make a call and then let the delegates deal with it. So here's what happened.
I'll do that one more time. All those delegates in favor say aye. All those delegates opposed say no. In the opinion of the chair, two-thirds have voted in the affirmative. The motion is adopted, and the platform has been amended as shown on the screen. Thank you very much.
So there you go. Adding God back to the platform draws loud boos from the Democratic delegates. And it was a reference to, I believe, God-given abilities or something to get jobs and so forth. So it wasn't exactly a detailed stand on the faith heritage of the United States in any way, Dan, but not exactly the moment the Democrats were hoping for there. And it hopefully shows that the base of the party is not where most of America is.
Yeah, there's a lot that was interesting about this. One is that, like last week in Tampa, where people complain about conventions being entirely orchestrated affairs, we got the little thing with the Ron Paul delegates to show us that there's, for good and for ill, a little bit of democracy, lowercase d, left in the the process. Same thing here. I thought I described it as the most authentic moment of the Democratic convention so far. People on the left will tell you that the boos weren't about God and Israel. The boos were about the process, that they didn't like the way Villaraigosa called it. And there's certainly something to that. I mean, obviously, it was just by fiat, and it was a show vote. We hear, from strategic leaks yesterday that President Obama personally intervened to change the platform. But if the platform is supposed to be the reflection of the incumbent president's vision in his party when he's the incumbent, so it raises the question of why he would need to intervene. And it shows how, again, President Obama walks this very, very fine line between knowing that it's not acceptable to be on anything less than solid terms with our strongest ally in the Middle East, and this kind of personal ambivalence, whatever, bordering on animosity, that the party and, maybe the president, who knows, who can really tell what he's thinking, has towards Israel. So there's that tension was clearly on display, and you actually heard it, and, if the media covers it at all, which I didn't see much of it yesterday, you'll hear it in the Democratic base. Same goes for God. And as you said, it wasn't as if they were lacing the platform with detailed theological exposition. It was one reference. I thought it was an authentic moment in the good sense of the term, because it shows you where the Democratic Party is, or where a big piece of it is. Democrats often say that they are the mainstream pragmatic centrist party and the Republicans are the extremists. But moments like this give the lie to a statement like that.
Politico, I believe, just yesterday that said that the president had seen the platform. I don't know if he pored over every detail of it, said he didn't have any problems with it. And now that there was this backlash, Stephanie Cutter was on at least Fox and elsewhere today saying that the president hadn't seen it. And when he found out those things weren't in there, he demanded that those changes be made. And if we've learned anything in the last few weeks, Dan, we know that Stephanie Cutter is giving it to us straight.
Yeah, exactly. And I have to tip my cap to Daniel Halper over at the Weekly Standard, who was the first guy who reported this. So it's come to the point where the Weekly Standard has more influence over the Democratic platform than Democrats.
And the question nobody can still answer, who took it out? nobody has any idea of how that language didn't make it in the first place. So very interesting. All right, on to martini number two now, and we will take just a fraction of the time discussing this speech that Bill Clinton took to actually deliver it. But here's a montage of some of his most memorable lines.
You see, we believe that we're all in this together is a far better philosophy than you're on your own. In Tampa, the Republican argument against the president re-election was actually pretty simple, pretty snappy. It went something like this. We left him a total mess. He hadn't cleaned it up fast enough, so fire him and put us back in. When President Barack Obama took office, the economy was in free fall. It had just shrunk 9.4% of GDP. We were losing 750,000 jobs a month. Are we doing better than that today? The answer is yes.
All right, just a couple quick observations for me before I let you go, Dad. First of all, I don't know why Bill Clinton thinks High School Musical is the way to get to people by saying we're all in this together. That's not going to get people to believe that the Republicans have a very different way of doing things, even though he tried to paint it as a very negative way. I think that actually reinforced the Republican message. Number two, the soft bigotry of low expectations. We're not losing 750,000 jobs a month anymore, so clearly we're on the right track. Finally, I don't think that the Republicans said he wasn't fixing it fast enough. I'm pretty sure they said he's making it worse.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, on the policy grounds, there, you know, you'd need a book to satisfactorily refute everything President Clinton said. I'd encourage everybody to click on over to the corner to look for specific refutations of claims he made. As I remarked, it was kind of amazing that he got people to cheer for his legacy, which consists of mainly Newt Gingrich's balanced budgets and welfare reform policies. And he even got the crowd to cheer for George W. Bush at one point, which I thought was maybe his most amazing rhetorical trick. There's good news and there's bad news here, I guess, from a purely political standpoint. The bad news is that the most charismatic orator in American politics right now works for the other side, and he believes things that are wrong. That's Bill Clinton. I think you have to give it to him. Speech was very, very effective in certain respects. Certainly played well in the hall. I mean, I thought they were all going to – every Democrat in the room was going to be lifted skyward at the end of the speech. The good news is that, you know, I'm kind of going the opposite direction that I did last week during Clint Eastwood's speech, and it's probably an unusual comparison between Clint Eastwood and Bill Clinton. But during Eastwood's speech, a lot of us in the hall, a lot of the press in the hall were thinking, what is going on? Are they going to have to pull Clint Eastwood off stage? Where is this heading? And then after the speech was over, it kind of sunk in and you thought, no, that was good. With Bill Clinton, it's kind of the opposite. During the speech, I thought, oh, this is really devastating. He's Slick Willie at it again. But yet, after the fact, I just sort of think that it's typical Clinton. I think Charles Krauthammer came on almost immediately after the speech on Fox and said, you know, typical classic Clinton, self-indulgent, way too long. Think about it. And I think he's basically right. I mean, it was, you know, 10, 15 minutes longer than the infamously long 88 speech that earned him widespread scorn. And it was very self-indulgent. I mean, it's clear he was just soaking up every last drop of spotlight he could get his hands on.
And Dan, of course, he always posts himself as a centrist. He became a centrist by necessity when Republicans took over Congress. I really thought he did himself a ton of damage by unnecessarily playing the race card on voter ID. That really just didn't seem to work very well. But right now, it seems like whether it's the message is a little bit more honed at the Democratic convention, or they're more fired up about their nominee and Republicans are more fired up about firing the president. Whatever it is, it looks like there's just a little more energy coming out of Charlotte right now, and there's obviously still the big speech tonight, so there's a little bit of concern there, I think.
I agree with you, and I think most of us here in Charlotte agree that the Democratic convention is a little bit more energetic than the Republican one, and some people would say, well, the Democrats love Barack Obama much more than the Republicans love Mitt Romney. You know what? I kind of like that, if it's true. One of the things I've seen in Charlotte that really concerns me is that there's a lot of talk both in the speeches and just around town about our president. He's our president. He's our leader. That's not what it's about. Mitt Romney is a standard bearer for a set of values. I think he's a good man personally, obviously. But just like I think Barack Obama is a good man personally. And Republicans really buy into the set of values, to the set of political priorities and a philosophy of government. In Charlotte, it's a lot more of a cult of personality. And I don't think that Democrats or Democratic pundits, at least, who are at least have to try for a little bit of objectivity, would disagree with me on that. I think there's much more of a personality cult in Democratic Party politics than on the Republican side.
Speaking of Democratic pundits, Chris Matthews has been in our third martini more than once in his career. This one is particularly interesting, though, given how much he loves Obama and loves Clinton. He was hard on him during the Monica Lewinsky scandal, but he's obviously just fawning all over him after the speech last night. He's on the set with David Korn of, I think, Mother Jones now he's with, and Daryl Hammond, who used to do Clinton impressions on Saturday Night Live, and somehow Matthews comes up with this.
Bill Clinton landed on Mars, he would know how to do it with him.
Oh, yeah.
He would know how to reproduce. He would know everything. He'd just instinctively know how to talk to people.
Yeah, aliens.
He'd be doing like, they'd be laughing in about 5 minutes. Yeah. The Martians. Yeah.
That's the last thing Clinton probably wanted to hear, Dan, but I think it once again cements, no matter how hard Bill Clinton tries, no matter how long he speaks at conventions, he has a legacy. It's just not the one he wants.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's very telling that they would immediately go towards he would know how to reproduce. I mean, Slick Willie is the best earned nickname in all of politics. Chris Matthews being Chris Matthews and doing his thing. But it's sad to me, you know, that this is a party that goes on and on and on about the war on women. And yet everything that came out about Clinton in 92, everything that came out in 97, 98, well, they don't care. I mean, you see women lining up to take their pictures with them, idolizing them. There's a real disconnect between the policy and again the cult of personality, and I think on the left all is forgiven if you have the right ideology.
Dan, enjoy the messianic culture there tonight. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
Dan Foster of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Join us again on Friday for the next Three Martini Lunch.